Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Unions representing Fairbanks North Star Borough School District teachers and staff are asking the school board to upgrade workplace safety provisions of their contracts in light of students returning to classrooms beginning next week. The school board considers the issue at a special meeting tonight. KUAC's Robin reports.
Last month, the Board of Education approved a plan for allowing public school kids to re-enter school buildings for in-person learning. They will be phased in. Elementary kids return January 19, middle schoolers on January 25th, and high schoolers February 1st. But the board's plan does not require schools to absolutely follow the CDC's guidelines for masking, social distancing, and hygiene. It asks schools to meet those guidelines only, quote, to the best of their abilities, unquote. That has the Fairbanks Education Association president, Sandra Ryan, concerned about the safety of teachers who could be exposed to the disease.
There's just language that needs to be put into place and remind us of some of the great work that we've already done with the district on protocols in place that, unfortunately, with the current directive from the school board, we'll be hard-pressed to maintain those.
FEA, which represents about 900 local teachers, sent the school board a letter asking to reopen the contract and negotiate clauses about workplace safety. Another letter came to the board from the Education Support Staff Association, or ESSA, that represents about 1,500 non-certified educators in the district. Both organizations, along with the Fairbanks Principals Association, negotiated three-year contracts with the district in 2019. ESSA President Jasmine Atkins-Brown says it will require quick work to negotiate new parts on workplace safety before students show up in 8 days, but she's ready.
We are prepared today to sit down with the district and start those conversations so that on the 19th, when elementary are supposed to start integrating back in, everybody can do that with peace of mind. You know, this limbo land that we're living in right now is hard on everybody.
Atkins-Brown says she'd like to see clauses that would define what employees could expect as the coronavirus moves through their ranks, and what is expected of them if schools are closed temporarily due to high case numbers or staff shortages. If the changes to the contracts are considered significant, they will require a vote of the school board. Tonight's school board meeting starts at 6 p.m., and the board is likely to go into executive session, which is typical for discussing labor contracts. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The number of Alaskans killed by COVID-19 rose to 223 over the weekend with the announcement of the death of a Fairbanks resident. A Saturday State Department of Health and Social Services report said a Fairbanks man in his 30s had died, the 21st Fairbanks North Star Borough resident pandemic fatality. The DHSS reported one new hospitalization as of Saturday night, with a total of 82 diagnosed or suspected COVID-19 patients in Alaska hospitals. 10 patients were on ventilators. Meanwhile, there were 251 new Alaska resident COVID cases reported Saturday, including 32 within the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Elsewhere in the interior, the Yukon-Koyukuk census area had two new cases. Federal and state entities signed a 50-year right-of-way permit for the controversial Ambler Road project last week, the latest step in a long-standing dispute between mining advocates and environmentalists. The Alaska Energy Desk's Wesley Early reports.
The permit was signed by the Bureau of Land Management, the National Park Service, and Alaska's state-owned development corporation, known as ADA. It allows the privately owned road to pass through lands controlled by the federal government. A company called Ambler Metals hopes to use the road to access copper, gold, zinc, and other mineral deposits in the area, in cooperation with the Nano Regional Native Corporation. The road would stretch 211 miles from the Dalton Highway to the Ambler Mining District east of Kotzebue along the Kobuk River. Part of the project would cross Gates of the Arctic National Park and Preserve, which is the part of the project that environmentalists are really opposed to. Bridget Pasarianos is an attorney for Trustees for Alaska. The group has filed numerous lawsuits on behalf of conservation groups opposed to the project.
Putting a gravel road through that area is going to really significantly and negatively impact the environment in that region.
Subsistence advocates have also filed lawsuits over the road, fearful that construction of the project would impact the migration of caribou. In its environmental assessment released last March, BLM officials flagged potential impacts to local water and air quality, as well as to wildlife migration and erosion. The project has received millions of dollars in state support. In a statement, Governor Mike Dunleavy described future efforts in the mining district as responsible resource development that is, quote, key to providing high-wage jobs to Alaskans and their families. Construction would still be several years away at the minimum. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Wesley Early in Kotzebue.
Governor Mike Dunleavy is appealing the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' decision to deny a permit for the proposed Pebble Mine. KDLG reports that according to a media release, the state will file an administrative appeal with the federal government. The Army Corps denied the permit in November after determining that the plan for the mine would not comply with the Clean Water Act and that the project is not in the public interest. In the release, Dunleavy calls the denial a, quote, dangerous precedent that would harm Alaska's future. His Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Corey Feige echoes that sentiment, saying that it has, quote, ominous implications for our rights as a state to develop our resources, unquote. Fishermen and tribes in Bristol Bay have been fighting the project for more than a decade. Dan Chayette with Bristol Bay Native Corporation says they, quote, completely disagree with the governor's decision, and he maintains Pebble is unlike any other resource development project.
Because of its location, because of its size, because of the type of deposit that it is, and the fact that it is in the midst of one of the world's greatest wild sockeye salmon fisheries.
Sue Anilan with the Iliamna Development Corporation backs the governor's decision to appeal the permit. She points to a lack of jobs in Iliamna.
If we don't do anything, we're gonna be stagnant. We're gonna still depend on the government. I don't want to move out of my hometown just to go try to get a job.
If built, the Pebble open pit gold and copper mine would be one of the largest in North America. A locally produced storytelling podcast has been selected by the New York Times as one of its top winter picks. Alaska has long been a focus of highly produced reality TV shows, but Dark Winter Nights focuses on simple first-person storytelling by Alaskans like champion dog musher Brent Sass's account of a failed canoe trip.
Told Matt to use the paddle to push me out. He pushed me out, but in the same motion, he was still holding the bear spray. And as he pushed out, he completely, like a 4-second spray right into my face. So,
how does anyone find us in the world of, you know, what, hundreds of thousands of podcasts these days? I don't know. I still can't really believe it.
Dark Winter Nights producer Rob Prince says he did not submit the podcast or in any way notify the New York Times of its existence, but it ended up on the Times' recent shortlist of, quote, icy podcasts to warm your cold, cold heart.
Feels like we've kind of leveled up in terms of our goal to share the real Alaska with the rest of the world.
Prince, a University of Alaska Fairbanks documentary film professor, has been producing Dark Winter Nights with volunteer staff and storytellers since 2014. There are three formats, live storytelling events, a radio show, and the podcast. Prince says the plan is to capitalize on the Times exposure.
When your pitch comes, you got to swing hard. So we're going to try and milk this for all we got.
Prince says within a couple of days of the Dark Winter Nights podcast appearing on the New York Times list, the number of subscribers jumped from 1,700 to 2,600.
That'll make it easier when we want to possibly approach more radio stations to see if anyone else also wants to broadcast the show. Or we also have kind of a dream of going on tour at some point. I think that'd be really cool to take some Alaskans down through the lower 48 or, you know, elsewhere.
The pandemic has put live Dark Winter Night shows on hold in Fairbanks, but Prince says he's keeping busy producing the podcast and radio version, which airs this coming Saturday on KUAC-FM. I'm Dan Bross.